Dr. Barbara M. Finn is Director Emerita and Honorary Curator at the Patricia K. Holmgren and William and Linda Steer Herbarium, where she worked for 40 years, serving as director for 20 years. Barbara is also an instructor at the University of Colorado Museum and Field Studies Program, a research adjunct at the Denver Botanical Gardens, and editor of Index Herbarium. The subject of her principal research is hepatocy. This is Susan D. Brock, Telluride Inside and Out, delighted to be speaking with Dr. Barbara Sears, a newbie at the Telluride Mushroom Festival. She is speaking on the subject of the mycological contributions of George Washington Carver at the upcoming and sold-out Telluride Mushroom Festival 2023. Dr. Barbara, thanks for joining me.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
So, online sources underline the fact that you are genetically predisposed to your interest in all things plants and fungi. Please take us back to young Barbara and the influence of your dad.
Sure. My father, Harry Tears, was professor for about 40 years at San Francisco State University. And he was passionate about the study of fungi and also about teaching about fungi. And his career was very central to my family life. As a young child, through my preteen years, weekend collecting trips were the way we spent our weekends in the fall and winter in California. And at other times of the year, I often spent set weekend days with him in his office, helping him with his collections and just absorbing the conversations and activities of his many graduate students. I mean, by the time I was a teenager, I wanted nothing more to do with mushrooms, or my dad for that matter. I had much better ways to spend my weekends. During my college years, I found my way back to the type of work that my dad and his students were most passionate about. And I came to the conclusion that spending time walking in the woods and then talking about what you found with like-minded folks and then preserving that knowledge in specimens and writings would be pretty much the perfect career for me. Of course, that view of the life and career of an academic biologist was very naive, but it is the vision that drove me through college and graduate school.
Great. Thank you very, very much. Would you please now summarize the path that led to your current high-profile positions as Director Emerita and Honorary Curator at the Herbarium and all the rest of your street creds? So bring me up to date on your life and work.
Sure. Well, I arrived at the New York Botanical Garden right after graduate school to start a one-year postdoctoral fellowship. And the project I was assigned to was to organize and index a very old and important collection of bryophytes, that is, mosses and hepatics, which are often sometimes known as liverworts. And this work was thrilling because I got to hold in my hands collections of these tiny and seemingly insignificant plants that were made by Charles Darwin, Richard Spruce, Alexander von Humboldt, and all in the last century. But it was also very frustrating work because often these historic specimens were not very well documented, and I had to do a lot of detective work to figure out what was collected by whom and where and when. But as frustrating as it was sometimes, I developed an enduring interest in botanical exploration and the history of historical collections. I was able to stay on the botanical garden after that and worked my way up through the administration. And I became very interested in how we can share data, this is extremely valuable data that are held in herbaria, how we can better share them with the world. And that led to a strong interest in digitization, making these collections available online, and also that expanded not just for herbarium specimens, but basically all natural history collections. And so my passion for the last part of my career has been in how we can, as a nation and as a global community, share the data that our legacy of data of collections that have been made in the past.
You know, I think I better back up a tiny bit and clarify one thing. For the uninitiated, what exactly is an herbarium? And more specifically, in that context, What is the index herbarium?
Oh, okay. So the herbarium was a European Renaissance creation, created as a way to preserve plant and fungal specimens. For plants, the technique involves collecting a sample of living material, pressing it between sheets of paper and cardboard until it's flat and dry, and then gluing it to a sheet of stiff paper along with a label that tells its name, where and when it was collected, and by whom. For fungi, the process is similar but a little different. The specimens are generally not pressed but are dried with forced air, and then they're placed in paper packets or cardboard boxes, again with a label that tells all the information about what it is, where it was collected, and so forth. It's such a simple method, but if kept free, dry and free of insect pests and molds, these specimens will last indefinitely. We can still consult herbarium specimens that were collected in the mid-1500s. And this simple means of preserving biological tissue was a key innovation that allowed the study of plants and fungi to become more than just a minor subdiscipline of medicine, but actually an independent scientific endeavor, because using these preserved specimens, scientists could characterize the plants and fungi that grow in faraway places and learn to understand their diversity on a global scale. Mm-hmm. And the index that I manage, Index Herbariorum, is basically just an index to the approximately 3,500 herbaria that exist around the world today. For each herbarium, the index provides information about what the herbarium holds, where it is, and how one could get in touch with someone to find out more about their holdings, to visit or borrow specimens, however one might want to access them. So it brings these worldwide collections into an accessible accessible resource through a simple search, online search.
Great. When and why did you choose to specialize in hepatitis C?
Well, the why is I've always liked the little appreciated things. I've always been interested in the things that are left out. So that appealed to me from the start. Liverworts or hepatitis C are very poorly studied. And in addition to fungi, my dad really liked these little plants, and he liked to collect them. But he often said, oh, they're just impossible to identify. Fungi are hard, but liverworts are just impossible. So that was the challenge. That was, sort of a hold my beer moment. And I figured I was going to see if I could do a better job than he could at identifying them. And he was right. They're if not impossible, they're certainly very difficult organisms, but they're also extremely beautiful. It's the kind of beauty that you can't really appreciate unless you have magnification. You can barely see them with the naked eye, and you certainly can't appreciate their complexity and their structure. But with a magnifying glass or a microscope, you can see that they are an absolutely gorgeous organisms with complex structure, and their tiny world is just a garden of beautiful shapes and colors and interaction with all sorts of many little critters like tardigrades and protozoans and things. So although many administration ended up consuming many of my years at the garden, in retirement now in Colorado, I'm having the chance to rediscover my love for the paddocks, and I go out looking for them every chance I get.
You sound a bit like the protagonist in a book by Elizabeth Gilbert called The Significance of All Things.
Yes. Well, I had the opportunity to meet Elizabeth Gilbert and tell her just how much I identified with her protagonist, who actually in many ways was based on a woman bryologist who preceded me by about a century at the New York Botanical Garden. So yeah, that story resonates a lot with me.
I figured. Okay. So your interest in the history of botanical collecting and the history of the herbarium led you to write your book, Herbaria, The Quest to Preserve and Classify the World's Plants, which was, I believe, published in 2020. Among its other revelations, herbaria underlines how the world's fauna is changing. So please talk about the evolution of that book and why it's important today.
So I wrote the book because one of my jobs as director of the Steer Herbarium for many years was to lead tours. I led tours for fancy, you know, donors. I led tours for school children. I led tours for local citizens, as well as other members of the botanical and mycological community. And so I had a bunch of stories that I had kind of collected over the years. And it was not uncommon for people to ask me, oh, is there a book I could read about this? And the answer was, no, not really. There's never really been a book about herbaria per se. In the world of biology and so forth, herbarium is sort of considered a resource, like a library, and certainly considered important, but nobody had ever really sort of focused on that. So that was why I wrote it. I wanted to tell the story, and it has been my mission, my whole career, to try to make sure that as many people as possible understand the importance of this resource. The importance of herbaria basically is that specimens that are held there, which, as I mentioned, date back to the 1500s, these are the fundamental documentation of what plants and fungi, you know, lived on Earth in the past. There are books and there are illustrations that can help us get a view, a snapshot of, or a glimpse into the past. But this is only a generalized view. The specimens are really the primary documentation of what lived where, when, over the past centuries. And in the world today, there are about 400 million herbarium specimens in these 3,500 herbaria I mentioned. So it's not complete, but we have an excellent record of past plant and fungal life on Earth. The problem has been that these institutions flung across the world in various places were not easily, you couldn't really search across them very well. You'd have to go and visit them. There's no easy way to extract information that you might want from them. So the effort to digitize the collections has been a huge step forward in trying to understand, use the data that are held in herbaria to understand change over time. Currently now, with basically not more than a few keystrokes, you can search about 100 million of these, about a quarter of the records that exist that have been digitized so far. So, and in the past decade, since this digitization effort really kicked in, there has been a huge amount of new research about using these data to come to conclusions or to make projections about the future and to understand better in the past.
So I guess that segues to your, I'm going to call it a fixation, with digitization. So the use of technology in your discipline.
Right. Yeah, so what digitization means, to start off with, it involves photographing the specimen and then transcribing the data that goes along with it into a structured format. I mentioned that specimens have to be accompanied by a label that tells its name, when it was collected, where it was collected, and by whom. And all of those data go into a structured format, which can then be searched. So you could search for all the collections made by a given person, all the collections made on a certain date, that sort of thing. And how these data are useful, I'm going to give you a few examples. We can plot where these specimens go on a map. We can determine their geo-coordinates. And on a map, then, you can make assessments about which species are at risk for extinction. There are some algorithms, very simple algorithms, that you can determine to you can use to determine how wide a species is distributed And then that will help you in how many individuals we know exist, and that will help you determine whether or not the species is at risk for extinction. And that's very important because conservation efforts want to focus primarily, or at least early on the species that are at risk for extinction. We also can use these data to understand how the vegetation, the plants and the fungi, have changed over time and project how it'll change in the future. So through using mathematical modeling, we can take the conditions that we know are conducive to the organisms at this time, and we can project how those organisms will react as a result of climate change into the future. What happens if the temperature rises by half a degree or the rainfall drops by 10 inches? How is that going to affect the organisms that naturally grew in that area? We can make pretty accurate predictions now using data from specimens that were collected maybe a century ago, long before this technology was ever imagined. Also, it's very important we can use these specimens to determine changes in the way organisms are living, what we call their phenology. That is, when do they reproduce? For plants, when do they flower? When do they fruit? When do they grow as seedlings? And this information of the timing of when plants reproduce is extremely important for understanding what happens if they become out of sync with their pollinators, you know, the bees and the bees that pollinate them, the insects that distribute them, and for fungi as well, understanding how their life events can be affected. And with our specimens, we know what they are, when they were collected, and we can look over time to see what changes are things beginning. It's looking like in most cases where the climate is warming, like flowers are blooming earlier, which is a problem if indeed they are not in sync with the fungi that pollinate them. And this is extremely important for things like our food plants that are pollinated by insects.
Okay, thank you for that in-depth explanation. I really appreciate it. Yet the subject that you will be discussing at the Telluride Mushroom Festival appears to have little to do with your vast base of knowledge around herbaria and hepatitis. So again, the subject of that talk is the mycological contributions of George Washington Carter. How did you come up with that, and how does it relate to your long history?
Well, so first of all, I may not have specialized in fungi for my research, but fungi have always been a big part of my life, and I've known about the Telluride Mushroom Festival since it first started. It's not just my dad, but my husband, Roy Holling, is a mycologist who has studied porcini-related fungi all over the world, and actually he'll be presenting on that at Telluride as well. Also, for my career, I was the person in charge of one of the world's most important fungal collections, and I had the privilege of supporting the research of hundreds, maybe even thousands of mycologists across the world, and I started the nationwide effort to digitize the fungal collections that were held in the United States. So how that relates to George Washington Carver is that many years ago, one of my assistants brought to me a specimen that they were about to digitize, and it said that it was collected, it was a specimen of fungi, and it said it was collected by a G.W. Carver. And they asked me, could this possibly be like George Washington Carver? The date was about right. And my first thought was, no, there are probably lots of people named Carver. Couldn't possibly be him. But I did start looking into it. And I found that not only was that collection made by George Washington Carver, but indeed he actually started out as a mycologist. And when he retired, he returned to mycology. We know him as the man who studied, you know, who popularized the peanut and its various uses. And although he's generally acknowledged as a brilliant inventor, he's not thought of as a research scientist. However, He made very important contributions to our understanding of fungi, especially those fungi that parasitize plants. And actually, nothing much is written about Carver's mycological world. Most of the information I've compiled comes from the examinations of the specimens he left behind. So the purpose of my talk is not just to introduce the audience to this side of a figure that they already know something about, but also to demonstrate the value of herbaria for not just understanding the plants and fungi of the past, but also the people who studied them. And, you know, as I mentioned, my quest for many years has been and continues to be to make people aware of and support the incredible wealth of knowledge preserved in herbaria and all natural history collections, and to indeed keep finding new ways to use these resources to understand our past and protect our future.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Dr. Tears. And I apologize for mispronouncing your last name in my introduction. So this has been Susan V. Brock, Telluride Inside and Out. Honored to be speaking with Dr. Barbara Tears. She is new to coming to the Telluride Mushroom Festival, although long acquainted with it. And she is once again speaking on the subject of the mycological contributions of George Washington Carver. Dr. Tears, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
Likewise.